We are on Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. We had just done the opening line in the Gemara, this Veshavin line. We had said in the Mishnah that Beis Shammai says that the block that's meant for crushing a grain should not be moved for cutting meat, and Beis Hillel permitted. And we gave two different explanations. Either the issue was it's Kli Shemalach Doli Isser, a utensil normally used for a prohibited purpose, or it's Mukza Machmas Kisaron Kis. It's Mukza because it is fragile. If you move it, you could break it, and it's an expensive item, and therefore we generally wouldn't move it on Yom Tov. Those are the two explanations, and then based on those two different approaches, you look at the opening line in the Gemara, which says Vishavin Shem Kitzev Alav Basar Sha'aser L'Taltalo. They agree, Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai agree, that once you have cut meat on it, you're not allowed to move it. So we took that in two different ways. Either it's talking about Mukza Machmas Chisaron Kis, and the idea that it is fragile, and what the Gemara is saying is, even though he already cut meat on it, and therefore and perhaps he has shown that he doesn't consider it to be so delicate, he moved it for that purpose, nonetheless, you're not allowed to move it, it retains its mukta status. That's one take. The alternative is to say that everybody agrees that once you're done cutting meat, you can't move it because it's a klisha malach doli isser. And then we said, well, you're allowed to move klisha malach doli isser for its own sake or for its space. So we said, maybe here it's talking about moving it mechama, let's say, to get it out of the sun. Something like that would not be permitted. And that brings us to Abaye, or two versions of Abaye. So we are now one line into the Gemara on Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. Amar Abaye, Machlokes Ve'eli. Abaye says this debate that we're having about when you're allowed to move the chopping block to cut meat, he says that's because what we're talking about is in Eli a block that's normally used for grain. Aval Betavra Garmi Divrei Hakol Mutar. But if it is something that's used to break bones, literally, and Rashi here says it's designated for chopping meat, is what we're talking about, garmi or bones. But he says if it's something that's meant for cutting meat, divrei hakol mutar, then everybody will agree you're allowed to move it in order to cut meat. So the Gemara asks the obvious question, pshita. Why is that not obvious? Something that's meant to be used for cutting meat may be used to cut meat on Yom Tov. Thank you. So, pshita, Eli Tanan. But the Gemara says not just in terms of the logic of Tavra Garmi, but the language of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah didn't talk about something used for meat. Our Mishnah talked about the Eli. And realistically, if you have a Mishnah that wants to talk about what you're allowed to move and not allowed to move, if you weren't allowed to move something that is for meat itself, that's what you would have mentioned. That's the bigger novelty, that I can't move something that's meant for meat. If it were true that anybody believed that I couldn't move that, then that would have been what we mentioned in the Mishnah. So the Gemara explains what I might have thought. Ma'u disema, hu hadin dafilu tavra garmi nami. I might have thought that the truth is that Beis Shammai, when they say you may not move the chopping block, they don't even allow you to move a chopping block that's used normally for meat. V'haydiksani Eli, the reason why we mentioned the Eli in the Mishnah, was only though diacha kochan de Beis Hillel, is to show you how far Beis Hillel goes. Da'afilu davar shemalach doli iser nami sharu, that even the Eli may be moved. Kamash Malana teaches me no. What we're missing here is the key question of, well, why should this be usher to move? It's Tavra Gami. What would be the logic in prohibiting this? Take a look at Rashi. Rashi Mahu Desema, the second wide line in Rashi. He says, Mahu Desema Hu Hadin Dafilu Tavra Garmi Asri Beis Shammai. I might have said that Beis Shammai even prohibits moving the block that's used for meat. Dilma Basar de Tiltala Mimlich Velo Tavar Veishtagach de Tarach Bichdi. He says, the concern is that maybe you're going to move this thing. These are big, heavy blocks. You're going to move it to wherever you would move it in order to cut the meat. And then you're going to decide, you know what, it's not worth the bother. I mean, you already did the bother. But now I decided I don't want to chop the meat after all. And if you do, then you did a tircha for nothing. That was the Havamina. That's why Beis Shammai, that's what I would think maybe would be the reason why Beis Shammai would prohibit moving the Eli, not the Eli, the Tavar Garmi, and that it's an issue of tircha. You follow?
That could apply to a lot of things.
Yes.
Could apply to everything.
But his machshava at the time was he was going to do it. He just decided after the fact that
correct.
He wasn't going to do it.
So correct. We are introducing a new idea here. We are introducing the idea that a person should not engage in number one, a person should not engage in tircha on Yom Tov, which has not been part of the conversation until now. It will be, but until now it hasn't been. But that's number one. Number two, we are going to prohibit you from engaging in tircha that enables you to have meat on Yom Tov, because otherwise you may do the tircha and then change your mind, and then the tircha was for nothing. That's what we're suggesting as a possible theory. Absolutely something that would become much broader than just the Tavar Garmi. How broad would it be? I don't know. Someone has to sit down and identify what is considered to be too much tircha. There has to be a threshold at a certain point. But that's exactly what he's going to say.
So really it's a machlokas bezel b'shamay in that circumstance?
Well,
you can move it or not?
Well, it's not, because we said we don't actually have this machlokas.
See, but it agrees.
But hypothetically.
But he agrees.
Correct.
So there's just a hypothetical possibility, which we don't actually go by.
Correct.
How do you define tircha, though? I mean, if it's for purposes of omic, then it shouldn't be.
Well, tircha has nothing to do with what the purpose is. Right? Tircha is an objective thing.
Yeah, but if I basically schlep, something for the purposes of eating it, there's onig at the end of it, so you're telling me that I'm not allowed to engage in tircha?
That's exactly, well, that's the hypothetical. Again, we don't say this, but that's the hypothetical concern. And even if it was said, it would be Beis Shammai talking.
Even where they agree, they're talking about after you cut the meat. Yeah,
no.
No,
they're talking about where you
no, not now,
the block.
The first part of the Gemara.
Well, that was the previous line. Yeah.
That if you cut the meat,
yeah,
then you can't move it.
Right.
Right. Well, if you cut the meat, then you didn't need to move it anymore in any event.
Wait, what? That was on the Eli case.
Right.
That you can't move the Eli after you have already cut meat on it.
Right.
Yeah.
So now we're saying the reason that he says you can't move it is because you may move it.
No.
You said you were
the reason for not moving the Eli stands. The whole discussion about Klisha Makhla, the Isser Makhla, that's old.
This is the Havamina.
This is the Havamina for the Mishnah.
Yeah.
This is the Havamina for something else which we didn't say in our Mishnah.
Okay, but Beit Shammai actually does hold Tirfa. We had the case with the birds.
What
does
that mean, hold Tirfa?
They hold, they were afraid, in the case of the birds, when we learned that,
yeah.
They held, you had to pick up the birds.
Yes.
They were concerned that you might, on Yontif, pick up birds that you're not actually going to use.
Yes.
So Beit Shammai actually does hold.
That wasn't Tircha. That's fixed.
It's Tircha picking up a bird and not using it. You might decide to start weighing each bird and decide which one to use.
Was that an issue of Tircha, or was that an issue of it's inappropriate to pick up the birds unless you're planning on using them?
That was Tircha.
Could be it was. I don't remember. It's possible. But either way, here we go. It was back on Yom Tov. And it was tilto shalal letzarech. That's what Rashi said there. Tilto shalal letzarech. That's not a tircha concern. That's a muktzah concern.
Okay, and this would be muktzah.
But again, what we're saying here is not changing what we said regarding the Eli. The Eli is what it is, and the concern is whatever we decided the concern was. What we're suggesting is that there's something else that's asur also, according to Beis Shammai, that wasn't mentioned in the Mishnah.
That's true.
And that is moving the thing that's for meat that would be asur because of the potential for unnecessary tircha. To which the Gemara then asks, well, why wouldn't you have mentioned that in the Mishnah? If Beis Shammai went that far, then as Alan is actually pointing out, you could have said that, and that would have included your chopping block in any case. Your Eli would have been included in that. Forget Klisha Makhla Le'Isser. Forget the discussion about whether it's Klisha Makhla Le'Isser or Mutzah Makhla Le'Isser and Kiyas. It's a Tircha issue. And everything would have been subsumed under Eli, under Tavar Garmi. To which the Gemara answers, you're right. However, the argument would have been, the argument for mentioning the Eli specifically, rather than mentioning the Tavra Garmi, is because by mentioning the Eli, we're showing how far Beis Hillel goes in the opposite direction. Because whatever concerns you have for the Tavra Garmi about Tircha apply to the Eli as well. And therefore now, Beis Hillel is a greater novelty. Not only is Beis Hillel allowing me to move an Eli, which has Klisha Machle Isser concerns, or Motzanach Misli Sarun Kis concerns, he's also allowing me to move Eli / Tavra Garmi, which has Tircha concerns. So they wanted to show me how far Beis Hillel went, and that's why they mentioned the Eli. That's always, this is a classic question. It's true that when we bring a discussion, we want to bring the most extreme case. But extreme, it can be defined based on either perspective, either the Matir or the Osir.
If he's bringing the Eli case because of Tircha, is that instead of the...
No, Eli, he's not bringing Eli because of Tircha. Eli was Chisaron Kis / Klish Machal Yisr.
Right, but now... Okay, now that we're learning about the block for cutting the actual meat...
Yeah.
Okay, Eli is the bigger Chiddush.
It depends on which way you're going. If you're going to say Usr, your bigger Chiddush is Tavra Garmi.
Right.
If you're going to say Mutter, then the bigger Chiddush is Eli.
But it's Eli because Eli is also a Tircha.
And because Eli is Tircha plus Mokza.
Okay, so you're saying plus Mokza.
Yes.
Okay.
That's exactly the point. The Tavra Garmi is only Tircha. Eli is Tircha plus Mokza. So if your conclusion was going to be Usr, then your bigger Chiddush is Tavra Garmi, because that's just Tircha. But if your conclusion is going to be Mutter, then the bigger Chiddush is Eli, which has Mukza plus Tircha. That's the idea. So the upshot of this, in any case, is, again, within this version of Abaye, because we have two versions of Abaye, the fact of the matter is that everybody agrees Mutter where it's just an issue of Tircha. Everybody agrees Mutter on the Tavra Garmi. Ika de Amri, but then the Gemara continues and says, we have a second version of Abaye. Amar Abaye, that Abaye actually said, Lo nitzricha ela filu Tavra Garmi chadati. Mau de sema mimlach velo Tavra Allah ka mashma lan. Within the second version of it, the debate is only still regarding the Eli, right? Not the Tavra Garmi. But what he's saying is, even a new Tavra Garmi, the new Tavra Garmi has never been used. And one second, Lo Nitzricha. Which way does Lo Nitzricha go then? Yeah, take a look at the Rashi, Ika de Amri. Actually, that's a better way to walk through it. Rashi is on the third wide line. Ki osvine pshita eli tnan. When we ask the question of, well, isn't that obvious? The Mishnah said eli, therefore, obviously, the concern is not Tavra Garmi, the concern is only eli. Shani Abaye gufei, Abaye himself answered this way. Lo nitzricha hada amrinan, aval Tavra Garmi divra kol mutter. We didn't need to say Tavra Garmi is mutter. You're right, that would be pshita.
Right.
Ela le Tavra Garmi chadati, except for the case of a new Tavra Garmi, a new meat block. Shelo kitzev alea me olam, he never used it to cut meat. And the concern there is a stronger concern that he might decide not to use it. Right? You ever have that happen? You bought something that's brand new, and you thought you were going to bring it out to use it, and then you say, you know what, let me put it aside, save it for a better occasion. Okay? Whatever item it is, it depends on what people value. But there are certain opportunities that you have where you could use something that's brand new, and then you say, you know what, let me save it. So if you're dealing with a brand new Tavra Garmi, there's a greater concern that you're going to say, you know what, let me not use this. Let me hold off. I don't know what your special occasion is going to be. It's already Yom Tov. Nonetheless, I want to wait for a different occasion. So what Abaye says is that The machlokes is the Eli. Tavar garmi is mutter. The Gemara challenges and says, well, it's obvious that Tavar garmi is mutter. To which his response is, no, what I mean to tell you is even a new Tavar garmi is mutter. Everybody will permit even a new Tavar garmi. And that was not obvious. That's not something that you would have known
so
on your own.
The machshava argument then at the end of the day.
What do you mean? What machshava? Well,
you could predict that that he may not end up using this this new tava garment, right? Human nature and what it is, and therefore maybe he shouldn't be.
Right, and what we're saying is we're not concerned for that. We're bound to be, but we're not yet. At this moment in time, we're not. One line later, we may be. But right now, that's what Abaye is saying. Abaye is saying, that's why I might have thought it. It's actually interesting. I didn't realize this as I was preparing it, but it's occurring to me now. These two Ika de Amris are really going in entirely different directions. These two versions of Abaye are going entirely different directions. Meaning, the first version of it, the question was, well, he made a statement. He said, the statement that I'm making is, Tavar Garmi is going to be mutter. And the Gemara said pshita. And we took the pshita to mean, well, it's obvious because our Mishnah didn't say it, and we needed to explain then why I would have thought that it would be usser even though our Mishnah didn't say it. Right? That was the initial approach. The second approach within Abaye, they're not resolving what the Mishnah said or didn't say. Their question is, what would the logic be in saying that this block should be usser? And he's saying that the logic behind saying it's asur is because it's new and therefore the guy might change his mind. They don't address at all. Within the second version of Abaye, we don't address at all why it wasn't mentioned in the Mishnah. You follow what I'm saying? These are two different approaches to the Pshita.
Does he have a problem with that?
Well, apparently not. But he doesn't even go that route. He doesn't discuss it in the context of the Eli at all. He doesn't do that at all. But let me try to restate what I'm saying, because I think this actually may matter. Within the first approach, when you ask Pshita, when you say, well, it's obvious that this is mutter, what you mean is, it's obvious this is mutter, because the Mishnah would have said asur, or would have said machlokes, if there was a machlokes. And then he answers, no, the Mishnah would have left it out, because it wanted to show how far Beis Hillel went to permit. But your pshita question is, it's obvious that this is mutter, because the Mishnah didn't include it. Within the second approach, it sounds like the pshita is, it's obvious that this is mutter, because I'm not concerned for such things. I'm not concerned about you might change your mind and therefore your techa was for nothing. And therefore he needed to construct a case in which it's more likely that the guy would back out. Where? Where it's a new chopping block. So it's a different pshita argument in the two versions. At least that's the way it sounds right now, because he hasn't gone back to the Mishnah and he's not going to go back to the Mishnah to ask why it was omitted.
Is it two versions, or is Abaye answering the pshita on himself? Because the wording is la-nitzercha.
Yeah.
Okay, so
he's asking, you're 100% right that he's answering the question against himself. But it's an Ika de Amri in terms of what the answer is that we're giving. Effectively, the Ika de Amri starts with the Mahu Desema. Or starts with right after the word Pshita.
Right, but he's the one himself that answers that it's a Chadash.
Yes.
So is it two opinions of Abaye, or it's one that he's just expanded on?
Well, it's two versions of Abaye, two different editions. When we say Ika de Amri, what we mean is that there are two editions
of what that was heard.
Yeah.
So do we know why Beis Hillel permits the Eli then? I mean, what their reason is for it?
For the Eli?
That's what he said.
Yeah. Beis Hillel's reason for allowing use of the Eli was because of Simchas Yom Tov.
Not concerned about Chizaron Kiss.
Chizaron Kiss / Klishma Kalias or whatever, yeah.
No, it doesn't affect you.
So that's where the Gemara is right now. The Gemara has concluded that Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai agree you're not allowed to move the... you are allowed to move the Tavra Garmi. Everybody is good with that. And even though, whichever version I take, even though there could have been a thought that, you know, you're going to move the thing and then it'll turn out you didn't need it and therefore you wasted your effort, we're not going to worry about that. Got it? Well, that...
So, Alan, question about an Ellie, right? A new Ellie. Maybe it's more of a problem because, you know, I'm taking it out. Maybe I'll take my meat there. It's an unusual experience, and maybe then it would be more usher. Even according to Beis Hillel. That's right. Now, the second Abaye, right? If I take, you know, if it's a chopping block, right?
Yeah.
Or something like that, then, yeah, I take it, I change my mind. But if I take an Ellie, right? Oh, no, I can't put meat on that. I'm not going to put meat on it for any reason we learned last time, right? Because you're going to chop on it and you're going to destroy it, or if that's machmas, you know.
Well, I'm not sure where the concern for its damage is, whether it's because this is meat or whether it's just every time you take this thing out, there's a risk. Because, I mean, pounding grain on it can't be any gentler than pounding meat.
I don't know. Well, pounding meat is... we said that last week also, but, you're pounding with a knife and stuff like that.
The problem is that we get it from the butcher.
Right.
You know, the pounding is long gone by the time we get to it. So I don't know what's involved in the relative harshness of chopping grain.
Those big boards made of wood, fleischhacker, they chop, hack meat on. But they were pretty thick boards. Like,
what do I know from this? No. I've seen the cows while they're alive, and I've seen them when they're already, cut up. I haven't seen the intermediate step.
Well, in my day, when I grew up, anyways, everybody in their basement had a big sink, and they had a counter, and the women used to basically go down there, and they had a big board, which was yay thick, and they would take a hatchet, and they basically would chop it up. That's what they did. So it was pretty thick. It wasn't the kind of thing that was ever going to be fragile, like Gerard said. So compared to grinding wheat, which is a completely different process.
Well, I don't know. It's a crushing of the wheat. It's not a grinding.
Yeah, but it's...
One way or another, the bottom line is that we didn't draw any distinctions in our Gemara between the new Ellie and the old Ellie. But what the Gemara does want to do is ask this question about Beis Shammai, this concern for second thoughts. Does Beis Shammai really have no concern about second thoughts and about the Tircha being for nothing? That's what our Gemara wants to pick up on. It's the middle of the line, about 20 lines up from the bottom, 15 maybe. Ube Shammai lo chayshi le'em luchay. Beis Shammai is not concerned for the possibility that you might change your mind. Vahatanya, what about the following brisa? Beis Shammai omrim, ein molichin tabach v'sakin etzel behema. You are not allowed to bring a butcher and a knife to an animal. V'lo behema etzel tabach v'sakin. You're not allowed to bring the animal to the butcher and the knife on Yom Tov. Beis Shammai says you're not allowed to bring them on Yom Tov, and apparently the concern, as we're going to see, is that he might bring them there and then change his mind. Ubeis Hillel omrim, molichin ze etzel ze.
He joined the SPCA or whatever.
No. Beis Hillel says you are allowed to bring them. And Beis Shammai omrim ein molichin tavlin umadoch etzel medocha. Beis Shammai says you're not allowed to bring spices and the pestle to the mortar, right? Madoch is the pestle that you use to smash the stuff. The medocha is the mortar that it's in when you smash it. So you're not allowed to bring the spices and the pestle to the mortar. Velo medocha itzal tablanu madoch. And you're not allowed to bring the mortar to the spices and the pestle. Ubeis Hillel omrim, molichin ze itzal ze. And Beis Hillel says, no, you are allowed to bring one to the other. End of quote. So isn't that this concern about tircha? That's our question.
Now with Beis Shammai, is
Beis Shammai, right? Isn't Beis Shammai concerned for tircha, and therefore that should be subject to the machlokas also?
Right.
To which the Gemara says, no. Hachi hashta, literally like this now. Bishlama behema asi li'im luchei, damar nishbuk hai behema kechusha. Umaisina behema achrisi dishmena mina. He says, when you're dealing with an animal, it is indeed possible that the guy's going to change his mind. Because he's going to say, let's leave this animal. This animal is too thin, it's too weak, it doesn't have enough meat on it for my needs. And I'm going to bring a bigger animal, a richer animal, an animal that's really got meat on its bones. It changes his mind. And therefore we're saying, don't bring the meat back and forth. And as for the spices case, kederanami, the
pot... How do you do the shechita then? In other words, I assume the butcher isn't person's not living in the field.
Right.
How do you get the two together?
So how do you ever get to shechita according to Beis Shammai? Hang in there.
Okay.
Kederanami, the pot of food also that you want to have, you want to chop up the spices for the food. Asi le'emluche, he's going to change his mind. Damar nishbuk hai kedera debayatav. And he says, forget this pot. It needs spices. I'm not going to do it. Umaisinach lisi lo bayatav. And I'll use other food that doesn't require the spices. But hacha ma'ika le'meimar. But what are you going to say in our case? This is his answer. His answer is, I understand that in the shechita case, or in the spices case, it's theoretically possible that you're going to change your mind. But there's no such concern when you're dealing with a chopping block that you're going to change your mind. Why? He says, Ma'ika lememar, what are you going to say? Mimlech v'lo tavar. He's going to change his mind and say, well, forget it, I'm not chopping the meat. Kevin deshachta l'svira kaima. He shachted the animal. He's going to chop the meat. He's not going to decide now, well, I'm sparing my chopping block and therefore I'm going to let the entire animal go to waste. That's not realistically where this is going. So therefore, what we're saying fundamentally is, Beis Shammai is concerned for people changing their mind. Beis Shammai does worry that people change their mind. However,
water.
Oh.
Whatever you
okay. The Beis Shammai is concerned that people change their mind. However, he didn't feel it was a realistic consideration in the case of the chopping block. So how he asks a question, he says, well, if this is really a concern in the animal case, then how are you ever going to do a shechita? So if you take a look in the margin, on this, on the Ein Molichin Tabach V'Sakin, there's an asterisk, I'm sorry, the inside margin is the one you want, the asterisk on the inside. Okay? They give you the addition from the Tosefta. If you can read the fine print. I don't know whether Steinsaltz has it, what margin it's got it in. But Tosefta Issa, and the Tosefta is found, Beis Shammai Omrim, Molichin Tabach V'Sakin Eitzel Behema. He says, you do bring the butcher or the knife to the animal. Aval Ein Molichin Behema Eitzel Tabach V'Sakin. It's that you don't bring the animal to the butcher and the knife. So you can go one way, you can't go the other way. The tircha is not in bringing the butcher. The tircha is in bringing the animal. That's the way that the Tosefta has it. There are other additions which actually leave out the tabach because of a separate point. Rashi here, if you take a look at Rashi, it is on Ein Molichin Tabach V'Sakin, the end of the fourth wide line, beginning of the fifth. He says, if they're far from each other, we don't do this. Bring Dilma Basar de Tarich Mamlich, because after you put in the effort, then he may change his mind, right? Rashi is consistent with our sugya, that the concern, in fact, is Tircha. However, that's not the only way to take our sugya. If you take a look at your sheets, source Aleph, the Ran makes an additional comment which throws off everything. The Ran says, Va'afilu derech rishus harabim. When we say that you're allowed to do the molich, but you're allowed to bring them according to Beis Hillel permits even via a public domain. Ve'af agav de'efshar da'avid lame esmol. Even though you could have done this Erev Yantif. Afilu hachishari. Nonetheless, Beis Hillel says it's permitted. Mishum dahotza ba'ochal nefesh ketikun ochal nefesh atzmo hi velo kemachshirin. Because the general rule is that I'm allowed to do acts for ochal nefesh on Yom Tov. And And even if it could have theoretically been done yesterday, if my food's going to be better by me doing it today, I'm allowed to do it today. So he says transporting to the shochet is part of ochel nefesh. It's not considered like some distant backup step. That is the preparation of the food. V'tigun ochel nefesh atzmo afilu efshar lasosame erev yom tov. And preparing the food itself, even if you could have done it before Yom Tov, delom is going to be allowed. Delom ephalginon bein efshar lalo efshar elev machshir. And we only distinguish between where it could have been done or couldn't have been done if you're dealing with distant backup steps. That's a whole other discussion, which we're not ready for. But the point is that the way the Ran formulates it, our concern is not a concern about tircha at all. This is a separate conversation. We understood our Gemara's emphasis to be on the question of whether Beis Shammai believes that you have to be worried about tircha that may end up being in vain. Sorry?
It's muktzah.
Not muktzah. Our Gemara seemed to be saying, and that was how the Rashi took it, that we were trying to show that Beis Shammai does believe that you're not allowed to engage in tircha if there's a chance that it'll be for nothing, that it'll be in vain. What he's now saying, what the Ran is now saying, is that the key point is not tircha per se. The point is anything that you want to permit for the sake of ochel nefesh that may end up being in vain. In this case, hotza'ah. Not mutzah, but hotza'ah. Transport through a public domain. That's the concern, according to the Ran. You follow? That's what he says the emphasis
is. What's the
issue
of the public domain?
The issue of the public domain is you're going to carry the knife.
On Yontif,
yeah.
Why do you have to worry about that?
Because you're not allowed to transport on Yom Tov without an Eruv, only the Tzorech. There has to be some minimal Tzorech involved in order to be allowed to carry on Yom Tov, even Yom Tov, yeah. You don't need an Eruv for it. You just need a Tzorech. We'll see that more explicitly in the Gemara later on. So if I have, let's say I'm going to go out to Tashlich, and I have a dirty tissue in my pocket, so I have to get rid of the tissue. There's no point in having that with me. There's no tzorech involved. That would be an example of something where there's no tzorech. But the point here is that, according to the Ran, it's about hotzah. It's not about tircha. It's about the concern about it being done, being overridden in vain. However, there's one little problem with that read. And that is, of course, the butcher. There's no hotzah involved when you bring the butcher, right? The knife is an issue. The butcher's not an issue. He's not hotzah. He's a person. He's a human being. So indeed, the Beis Yosef, if you take a look at source base, says, V'nira, dahadik sani tabach v'sakin eitzel behema. He says, when it says not to bring the butcher and the knife to the animal, Iker milsam mishum hotzah sakin hi. The issue really is transporting the knife. V'tabach kedinas vei. And the butcher's brought along just for the ride, so to speak. He's mentioned along with it. Yeah, it's really tabach v'sakin, correct?
The shochet always has his own knife, right?
Right.
That's what we're talking about. But yeah. Maybe they're read in conjunction with each other. The shochet brings with his knife.
Yeah.
That's what it's all.
He says, "Depshita shahadam yachol lelech l'chol makom sheyirtze afilu shalol etzara kol shehu b'socha tchum." Right, as long as he's within the tchum, he can go wherever he wants. You can't tell me it's a tircha concern to bring the butcher, or you can't tell me it's a hutzah concern to bring the butcher. Either way, he says the essence is the knife. So the conclusion that our Gemara brings is that Beis Shammai is normally concerned for the possibility of second thoughts. That is a concern. However, here he's not concerned in the chopping block case because it's too late. He's not going to change his mind. That's the idea. Now, on this, take a look at the Ritva, please. Source Gimel. Vikashyali, he says, this is difficult for me. De'akati ikal amechash. There's still room for a concern. Dilma mimlech dechayis Allah. The concern that he had was, I'm worried that my board is going to split. Okay, Lifka will take it to be Paka, will take it as to split. There still is that concern. Umisvar Batavra Garma Atika, and therefore what he's going to decide to do is use an old board for chopping things instead of using the new one, to go back to Abaye's case about the new versus the old. V'yesh Lomar, but he says, you could answer, Dahalo Shchiach, that it's really not a common thing for the board to split as a result of chopping the meat. That's number one. V'odin further, Kevan de la hai de les layatika shari, vinasa klisha malachta laheter, sulo chayshin in laha, afilubim bisha yeshlo tavra garmi atika. He says, once we're going to say that if a person only has one chopping block, he's allowed to use this one, because there's no concern that he's going to decide to use another one because he doesn't have another one. You're not now going to give me a split and say, where the guy has two boards, it's usser, because he might change his mind to take the, you know, you're not allowed to take the nicer one, because you might change your mind later and want to take the older one. And we're going to say, if you only have one board, then you're allowed to take the, but he says, we're not doing that. We're not creating rules like that. Because at the end of the day, even if he does change his mind, he picked up something legitimately. In a mutter way, it's an item that's suitable for the job at hand. And also, that's not the way we create rules, such that this person will be allowed to because he only has one board, and this person will not be allowed to because he has two boards. We're not going that route. So the what the Ritva's point is simply that he's explaining what the concern was about somebody changing his mind. What the issue at hand actually is. And the issue is that you might change your mind and say, I want to take another one. And theoretically, that would still apply, even if you already shechted the animal. That's still a concern, even if you already shechted. Nonetheless, it's not enough of a concern to warrant that we say that it's usser. That's the idea. So the upshot of everything that we've done is we've introduced at least one, if not two, significant issues. Issue number one that we've introduced is the concern for unnecessary tircha, right? The concern for tircha that will turn out not to have been needed. And we're saying that Beis Shammai generally does have such a concern. And number two, along with that, not just unnecessary tircha, but unnecessary violation of rules where we overrode things like hotzah, beyond the tircha thing.
I'm just trying to understand the case. With Beit Shammai, with the behema as an example, doesn't Beit Shammai hold that you had to have designated the animal before yontif, or does he not hold that way with animals, with domestic animals, and he only holds that way with birds?
Say that question again.
What is the story of this animal? In other words, before Yontif, did Beit Shammai say, I am going to shecht this cow?
That's interesting. I don't think you require dedication for cows, no. First of all, from the flow of our Gemara, it sounds like not.
Well, you don't.
Because otherwise, how are you changing your mind in the middle about this particular cow? Right. Unless he designated more than one, you could have such a case. But I don't think it required designation. I think the designation was unique to the birds.
Because they fly away, right? They change at that point.
Well, if I take the concern as, because otherwise you may not have, you know, birds around that are fat enough, that are plump enough, right? Because you didn't check them in advance. With meat, not to have that kind of a concern. I mean, a cow is a cow. You know, how many people are going to be able to eat off of that?
I don't know animals, but yes. Okay, so nothing is designated. And same thing with the spices, you don't have to, it's food, you
correct.
Don't have to designate anything.
Okay. Right. I think it's unique to birds that you have a designation. Okay.
There were lots of examples
where you
did designate an animal for a korban.
Designate for a korban is a whole different ballgame. That's a whole different thing. That has nothing to do with yontif. That has to do with the korban having to be lishma and hakdasha and completely separate issue. I wouldn't mix that with this.
I mean, we designate dirt. That's why I thought we would also designate. I mean, we basically designate everything. So that's why I'm a little surprised.
Right. We don't designate everything. All right. Let's go further in the Gemara a little bit. the Mishnah had brought the second machlokas. The second machlokas was putting the hide in front of the people who are going to trample it. And Beis Shammai says, we're not going to let you put the hide out for people to trample it, and you're not allowed to pick it up unless it has a kezias of meat on it. And Beis Hillel permits, and last time we saw, Beis Hillel permits both of those. Okay. So the Gemara comments on that. We are seven lines up from the bottom. So, yeah. Tana, we learned. V'shavin shemolchin alav basar litzli. Here's an interesting v'shavin. This is an agreement between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. You are allowed to salt meat while it is on the hide for roasting. Okay. Do you salt meat when you roast it?
You don't have to, no.
Right.
No salting.
When you're dealing with kashering, right, when you roast, that's the whole liver thing, right? When you roast something over a flame, then there is no requirement to salt it. The requirement for salting as part of the kashering process applies to meat that's going to be cooked in other ways. But when you're roasting it, the fire itself is supposed to draw the blood out.
Right.
The salting is not necessary. So that's exactly the point here. If you're going to salt meat on the hide, some salt is going to get onto the hide itself. And that will begin some of the process of working the hide and preserving the hide. So the hide will benefit from the salt.
Wouldn't it be usher to salt the meat?
Why?
It's still in the earth.
I want to put salt on my meat. I'm going to eat it.
I like the taste.
Yeah. That's all. Yeah. So it's a lesser degree of salt. And that's why I'm allowed to salt it on the hide. Even though the hide is going to benefit, I'm not using an amount of salt that people associate with tanning a hide. It's a minimal amount of salt. So therefore, it's not such a big deal. That's what we're saying, is that everybody agrees that this I am allowed to do. Amar Abaye, to which Abaye says, Lo shanu ela litzli. That's only the level of salting involved in roasting, which is this minimal amount of salt. Avo lekidera lo. But not if you're planning on salting it so that you can boil it up in a pot. And the point isn't the pot per se. The point is non-salting, non-roasting. So the Gemara says, Pshita, that's obvious. Let's lead to non. Didn't you look at the wording? It says salting it for roasting. Hakamash malan dafilu litzli ke'ein kedera asur. No, it's teaching us that when you do roasting, if you were to do it for roasting, but you were to put an amount of salt like what people put on when they are boiling the meat instead of roasting it, that will be prohibited. In other words, what Abaye is trying to show us is that the point isn't what way you're cooking it. The point is how much salt are you putting on it. If it's tzli level salt, you're good. If it's kedera level salt, that's not allowed, because then you're just working the hide.
Is the salt being put on for actual salting food, or is this
take a look at Tosfos, because he'll say it better than I can. Take a look at Tosfos of the Shavin. You'll have a little Tosfos at the end. V'shavin shemolchan al basar litzli. Lav mishum ditzarech malicha litzli. It is not that you require salting for roasting. K'dim mefarish b'chulin, like the Gemara Chulin says. Ela mishum shenagul amalcho, k'dei litein tam. But people like the taste of salted meat.
Well, why would you put the salt on after you already roasted it?
Clearly, you're not a gourmet. This is part of the process, and it'll improve it. It's like salting the water when you boil the pasta. You have to, you'll say, well, just put salt on the pasta at the end.
I don't understand one thing.
There's a process for cooking.
Maybe it's just a process question. This is meat with the hide still on.
Yeah, this is meat. Well, I wouldn't look at it as the hide still on. You've stripped the hide from the from the animal,
right.
And there is some meat that is stuck to the hide.
And you're salting
that little piece of meat that's stuck to the hide. Yeah,
and you're roasting it at the same time.
Yeah,
the hide.
No, you're gonna roast it after. You're gonna take the meat off of the hide.
Right.
Yeah, you're gonna take the meat off of the hide in order to roast it.
But you're not doing anything to the hide with the salt.
Well, that's the thing. What you're doing when you sprinkle it on, right? When you sprinkle the salt
on, the meat is on. I was just trying to figure it out.
Yeah,
what it looks like.
Keep in mind, they're not dealing with neat cylinder containers that hold salt, right? Some of the salt's going to scatter and get on
meat. My question is more: the meat is on the hide, and you're salting.
You're roasting it, or you're taking...
not roasting it. It's
you're not roasted. It's not roasted yet.
No, I'm going to take it off of the hide before I roast it.
So how are you roasting, how are you salting the hide then?
I'm salting the meat.
Right.
When I put salt on the meat, some of it gets onto the hide also. Then I take a knife, I carve the meat off of the hide, and I roast the meat. That's the idea.
Okay.
What's the moshava then? The moshava obviously is...
The moshava in salting meat in general, for roasting, is just for taste. The moshava here... Right. Is I don't want this hide to go bad, and therefore I'm starting the curing process. And other sources, not like this one here, but other sources that discuss this actually talk about leaving little pieces of meat attached to the hide deliberately when you skin the animal, like a piece here, a piece here, a piece here, a piece here, so that by scattering salt on all the different little pieces of meat that you left, eventually you'll end up salting the entire hide. That's the...
Basically, it says normally it's done for taste, but in this particular instance, it's not done for taste.
No, he's saying it is done for taste normal. Yes, people salt it for taste, and what your goal here is you would like to preserve the hide. That's what you want to be able to do. So now, why is this, in fact, mutter? If what you're doing is starting the hide, why is this mutter? So I brought you on the sheet in Source Dalet, the Rashba.
The question is, why is it mutar? Why would Beit Shammai hold it's mutar? Because
right.
It means he's holding by simchas yontif.
Yeah. So the Rashba writes, "V'shavin shemolchad al basar litzli, perish dima'abed kila achar yadhu." He says me'abed, which is the act of tanning the hide. He says it is with a shinoi. It's kila achar yad, right? It's an unusual way to do your tanning of the hide. And therefore it's a derabanan. Umishum tchilasan hitiru sofan. And in order to make sure that you will shecht in the beginning, they permit you to salt at the end. That's the idea. Because it's a derabanan, and there's simchas yom tov, therefore even Beis Shammai is going to permit. And then he goes on and says, v'davka letzli, specifically the salting level that's used for roasting, aval lekidera lo, but not the kind for cooking in a pot, even though it's also with a shinui when you add more salt, kaven de efshar le beporta, since you can get by with less, the hainu litzli, meaning the level for roasting, lo mimne b'shachit, hilkach lo shari leitve. We figure that since you can accomplish your goal with less salt, that's what you'll do. You won't say, well, since I can't use more salt, therefore I'm not going to shecht. You'll do it the way that they're advising. They've given you the minimum heter, is what he's saying. The minimum heter. We're not going to give you the maximum heter and say whatever amount of salt you want to use is fine. We'll give you the minimum heter, which is you can salt it to a decent amount with the meat on the hide. You've accomplished it because it's a derabanan and it's for the sake of making sure that people will shecht and fulfill the de'oraisa of Simchas Yom Tov, and we're good with that.
What is the perception of someone who sees us? In other words, when we learned last time about trampling on it,
yeah,
there was an idea of perception that people actually do sit on it, and so there was no perception of doing anything wrong. If you're salting it, people don't see that you have little pieces of meat on it.
Why not?
They're just seeing you're salting, unless they're up close.
I mean, to a certain extent, we have to, this is the sort of field trip terrain. Meaning, I don't know what size of the meat
so
you have.
So there's no marasai in here at all.
Yeah, apparently not. Okay, so we'll pick up with that, I think, next week, God willing. But we got those points about Beit Shammai that I think were very important, those initial issues, as well as now this point about the salting, which we're going to have to continue with next week, because they're going to talk about doing this with fats, and it'll get more complicated.